Oh boy, here we go.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah?
It's Panning the Stream.
It is?
With Dan and Bianca.
It is. It's the two of us who just watched the end of Evangelion.
Or Evangelion, as you are wont to say.
I feel like if you made a tally of every time I've said Evangelion during our illustrious podcast career of this show, I think I've said Evangelion 90%+, maybe 95% of the time.
Yes, but off air, you often say Evangelion.
Accidentally, but hey, I'm on my best behavior here. I'm thinking about what I say.
It sounds like a Evangelion branded jelly.
Do you think they ever made fruit snacks?
Evangelion. Fruit snacks?
Well, we've seen all this stuff from like Japan where it's like there's Evangelion stuff on like fucking Doritos and stuff. Like,
do they have fruit snacks in Japan?
They have all sorts of like they're nuts on candy. Every time I've been there, it's just like their candy game is like so far ahead of us. And like there's whole stores of things that like they've got the obvious stuff. They've got the gummies. They've got the gummy rings. They've got the gummy worms. They've got, you know, the hard candies and all that stuff.
Dan, am I wrong in remembering that at some point in our relationship, you received a like assortment of Japanese candy? And we tried a bunch of them, and there was some that was really bad.
Yeah. I think there's a wide variety of Japanese candy, and I have tried a lot myself that is not great.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bunch of weird ones where it's like, here's a bunch of like little root beer gummies or something. A lot of gummies.
People are bonkers about this green tea Kit Kat. And frankly, I tried it, and I thought it was really bad because it tasted so much like green tea.
It's not my favorite, but like I do like the variety of Kit Kats in Japan. Mm-hmm. Like there's a strawberry cheesecake one that is awesome. They have a lot of flavors there that we don't have.
If I want a Kit Kat, I just want a regular Kit Kat.
Fair
enough. Or the dark chocolate variety.
Fair enough.
Pocky is where it's at.
Pocky's
great.
I'm
all on board with Pocky. I don't know if you would consider that a candy or some kind of cookie.
Or the tiny little pandas filled with chocolate.
Ooh, those are good. I actually like the strawberry one. Pandas March.
Those are super good, too. Mm-hmm. Japan is just doing great with food stuff.
Yeah.
They don't
have peanut butter over there, and they don't really have cheese there either, right?
You can find peanut butter and cheese over there. I don't know if it's a staple. I remember the couple times I've been there, there was a point in the trip each time where it's like, I need just some bullshit cheese. And so like me and Tim Turry would go to like a McDonald's or something and just like, we just need a quarter pounder. We just like...
And they would have it with cheese there?
Yeah, and it was pretty much what you remember. There would be like certain menu items and stuff, or like the chicken nuggets would be like, these are like weird circles. This isn't the shapes I'm used to.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, it is like McDonald's as you know it.
Okay.
For sure. But in general, like, oh my God, just the staples, you know, the ramen and the different like types of meat and everything are just incredible there.
Mm-hmm.
Not as hot on like some of the weird sushi stuff.
Yeah.
Like I was on that weird, the infamous Vita boat, where they just gave us the weirdest sushi stuff while we sat on the floor of a boat and didn't see Vitas for like 19 hours.
Yeah, well, there was that one time you and I went to that really high end sushi place with our friend Mike Cantor, and that was some really like the highest tier sushi you could possibly have. But I remember there was this one kind of. Like, it was a small plates thing where you would get different. And there was this one that was, like, this weird fish. I don't even know how to describe it, but it tasted like the texture was so weird and rubbery. It, like, made me uncomfortable. It was amazing sushi, but this one fish, I don't know what kind of fish it was, but it was so odd. And then there's that, like, eggy kind of thing, like an omelet that's weirdly sweet that I really like.
Is this like the...
We had that at that sushi place, too.
Is it similar to the cake you made me that I thought was an omelet?
No, it's not like that at all, but I could see why, in your mind, you draw that comparison.
What was the cake you made?
So, one time, for those that don't remember this tweet,
yes.
My mom, she comes up with these, or at least finds these recipes, these, like, Weight Watcher recipes that are, like, super low-calorie and just with, like, two ingredients. And there was this one cake that she made that I actually kind of liked. I mean, it was an amazing cake, but it was good for, like, 100 calories or whatever. It was just a box of Angel food cake and a, like, can of pineapple, like, canned pineapple.
I like pineapple.
And I think like a thing of Cool Whip or something. I don't remember exactly.
It all sounds good.
But either way, it was kind of what ends up happening is there's this weird cake that almost has a texture similar to cotton candy, if that makes sense. And I gave you a slice of it. Keep in mind, it tasted like pineapple. And it took you like halfway through a slice before you asked me, is this an omelet?
Was I drunk?
No, that's the amazing thing.
I was totally sober.
Stone cold sober.
Yeah, this all checks out. It looked, it was yellow, so I yellow equals omelet in my head.
Okay.
It was soft and yellow, it's an omelet. That's how that works. End of Evangelion, right?
That's right.
All right, good to see you folks. Remember listener support? Okay, now we got to talk about this whole thing. End of Evangelion.
Mm.
That's the thing we're talking about
mm-hmm.
here. All right, let's start here. We don't need to go beat by beat right now.
Well, let me just say.
Yes.
That our last episode of Panning the Stream, I was very hard on the final episodes of Neon Genesis Evangelion.
25 and 26 of the series.
Yes.
Yes.
And, you know, it was very dissatisfying to me. I think I explained myself. I think it was, you know, I get what they were trying to do. I get it was an exploration of Shinji's thoughts and, you know, the people in his life and whatnot. But to me, it was just such an abrupt change from, you know, what we had been expecting. And, you know, with consideration to budget issues and lack of time, whatever, I see why it was that way. And I feel a lot better about it after seeing End of Evangelion.
Yes.
I don't feel like those were good episodes and I never want to watch them again.
No.
But since I feel like I actually have an ending, even if this ending was odd, I am grateful that it exists, and I consider Neon Genesis Evangelion to have a conclusion now. Before it didn't to me.
A full satisfying conclusion. And,
yes.
And I know I played devil's advocate a bit on that mm-hmm. last one of, you know, like, hey, I did kind of appreciate the, like, kind of fuck the fans, I'm doing what I want to do thing, which we'll get into it, but this also kind of goes into that in kind of a fascinating way.
Yes.
But I especially feel better about 25 and 26 now after having seen this, which mm-hmm. it sounds like that's basically what you just said.
Yes.
Is that, like, it does contextualize it in a certain way that it does feel like an alternate ending. It's weird because, like, they can both happen. Right?
I can see that argument, but I feel like the things that were going on in Shinji's head in episodes 25 and 26 of the show were addressed in the movie in a much more succinct way that wasn't redundant and didn't last 40 minutes.
Two episodes, so yeah, like 46 minutes or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, I mean, it was addressed, and I feel like now knowing what human instrumentality entails, its presentation made a lot more sense in End of Evangelion than it did in the episodes, because in the episodes, we, even though supposedly he's going through instrumentality and it's this melding of everyone into one soul and the, you know, removal of AT fields, whatever, he still exists as a singular entity, and he's still confronting, I guess, in this case, it's in his mind or whatever, all these different individual people. So it didn't really make sense that that was instrumentality. You know what I mean? It just seemed like he was undergoing some internal conflict separate from instrumentality, although, you know, I guess it was, but it didn't. I feel like the instrumentality presented in the movie made a lot more sense.
Yeah, like, I see what you're saying, because, like, if 25 and 26 of the show are entirely within Shinji's head, mm-hmm. then these could just be, like, the projections of these people in his head mm-hmm. and not represent who they are in the real world.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, I feel like it's more literal mm-hmm. in End of Evangelion.
Yeah. There is a question as to what it would be like, the experience of melding with everyone and, you know, removing the barrier between us that's beyond physical and stuff like that, what that would entail. And it reminds me of a lyric from a Gojira song, which says, "Tell me what you see when you're everywhere." And it raises an interesting question. What would you see if you were everywhere? And I think that End of Evangelion kind of goes into that a little bit.
If you could just see everything, which...
At the same time.
Which, there is, oh boy, there are some visuals at the end of, End of Evangelion
mm.
that is just, I think it's meant to be literal, but you are just kind of seeing everything, and, like, you're seeing the nature of life and Earth change in front of your eyes, and it's incredible.
And obviously, I mean, I know specifically you're talking about the third impact and stuff, but, like, the actual instrumentality stuff, I feel like... It is, in representing it in an anime, which is inherently a visual thing, it's I mean, how are you going to represent something like that? So it does, if you were to just see screenshots of it or just see the clip of it, you would be like, this is the melding of everyone? No, it just looks like Shinji and Rei. But I understood the issue there, and I think they resolved it in an interesting way.
I was thinking about that because as of this recording, just to kind of give you some production note here, we have put out two of the episodes are out there publicly of our mm-hmm. podcast. Mm-hmm. And the two, you know, the negative one about 25 and 26 has not gone out. We don't know right. what the response to that is or anything. But I realized that, like, I could tease that we're watching End of Evangelion by just, I was like, oh, what could I say or what image could I use? And I searched for End of Evangelion, and there's the thing where it's just like a billion, like, neon crucifixes or crucify, I don't know how you say that, just with the earth and the horizon. And, like, that doesn't spoil anything. Like, mm-hmm. If you hadn't seen Evangelion, that mm-hmm. image means nothing to you at all.
Really, I think that you can watch this entire movie and having not watched the show and not be spoiled by anything. Thing because it's so confusing if you don't have the context.
I feel like the only thing that would be kind of spoilery is like we get into like giant naked Rei ghost, but I didn't want to show that or anything.
Well, I agree that that's spoilery, but I mean you have to think about what's going on even as someone that knows the context. But if you didn't have the context, like my sister-in-law Stacy was saying, like, oh, she's a teacher, and I guess her students were recommending she watches this movie because it's on Netflix now. And she asked me if I recommend it, and I was like, I really can't recommend this movie unless you watch the entire show.
Oh, by itself? No, yeah, no, I mean, no, no, no.
Unless you want to appreciate it for its visuals, but I feel like there's anime out there that has more like artistic merit than this show, you know, more interesting visuals and stuff if you just want to watch it for the visuals alone, because I feel like if you even want to attempt to, you will be completely lost if you try to understand. I feel like this movie or the final two episodes are like the greatest example of like what is something you could throw on someone's lap that they would be completely lost if they don't have the context of the previous episodes. I feel like you could throw someone into a Game of Thrones episode. You could throw someone into like
that guy's random, evil. She's going to be the queen. She wants to get the throne back.
Yeah. Any random Barry episode, any random fucking, I don't know, Stranger Things episode. And you could kind of put the pieces together. But the last two episodes of the show and End of Evangelion, you will be completely lost.
I think it's telling that the thing I constantly came back to mentally during this movie and 25 and 26 was the last couple hours of Metal Gear Solid 2.
Yes.
Which for the longest time, like when I first saw it, mm-hmm. I know I've talked about it a million times, but like it was the most confusing bullshit thing mm-hmm. in the world when I first saw it. And as time went on, I thought about it more. It just became my favorite piece of like fiction, mm-hmm. period. Mm-hmm. So I'm already kind of feeling that with this, and it's been so fascinating to like dive into like YouTube stuff and I just want to hear what people think about this.
Right.
And it's so interesting to see that there is not a consensus. There is not a like everyone loves it or everyone thinks that this is what this means.
Right.
It seems like there's a whole lot of different things.
There is. Yeah. I one person on a forum that I looked at after we watched the movie because I was looking for some clarity. I think they said it really well, and I don't have their username to reference them or whatever, but they said something to the effect of whenever you try to answer one question about this movie, it raises another like 20 questions. So I found comfort knowing that even like the most hardcore fans are still kind of like, well, some of this is open to interpretation. To me, that I can appreciate a lot more knowing that it's not just this like there is a definite thing that happened, but it's so obscure.
Yes. You don't get it.
You have to really take the deep dive to understand what's going on. I kind of appreciate that it's open to interpretation. Yeah. Because there is some really interesting stuff to interpret.
Yeah, and I love it because like this movie is completely fucking bonkers and weird and up its own ass. Mm-hmm. You know, which I could say those same things about episode 25 and 26 of the show, mm-hmm. but I think like this is presented in such a more fun and interesting, visually interesting, conceptually interesting right. way than the show does it. Because like 25 and 26 of the show, like I do appreciate what it did, but it was undeniably repetitive.
Right.
And just like, okay, we get it. We're just going to keep doing this thing over and over and over again. But I feel like this did a bunch of that weird, surreal, right. heady stuff, but it was so much more interesting to watch.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I said just before that, like, on its own, it's a visual merit alone. I mean, it is impressive, but there's better animes out there. But the visuals compared to the series are, like, a billion times better.
Oh, the budget clearly is fine.
But also, yeah. I wanted to say that after watching this, and we'll obviously get into the nitty-gritty of it, I felt like when I put it into this perspective of this isn't a show about, you know, the Evas and stuff. This is a show about essentially about Shinji or about, you know, these different representations of, you know, people struggling with themselves and their backgrounds and everything. It kind of made me accept it more because all this nonsense, all this sci-fi nonsense, trying to salvage some kind of explanation from that, it really isn't as important as the character study that it presents. And I think that even though the final two episodes of the series kind of took a super deep dive on Shinji and stuff, I feel like it was so redundant and so abrupt and just jumping from one thing to another. And, you know, like I said, it's redundant. It's rehashing a lot of stuff you already know. Whereas the movie, I think, was a better character study for Shinji because it showed him in context. And, you know, I feel like how it's cliche to say, but what people do is a better reflection of their state of mind than what's actually going on in their mind. You know, I feel like it's cheap storytelling to just have a few episodes that are essentially completely internal monologue, you know? I think actually showing him in the context, the decisions he's making, the struggles he's going through at this point in time where it is literally life and death, not just for him, but for all of humanity.
Yeah.
And showing how he reacts to that. I think that's a much better representation of his struggle, his state of mind, than the final two episodes were. And I think that it's a much more appropriate end to the show, like as far as it's on par with the bonkers levels of the previous episodes, both like in terms of the bonkers sci-fi stuff and the fact that it does devote a lot of time to Shinji struggling and making some really weird choices and stuff. So this is all to say that I really liked End of Evangelion. Yeah. I thought it was really weird, but it's the kind of weird that I like, and I'm so grateful for it after the final two episodes. I feel like I can look back on the series much more positively now that I have that.
Yeah, I think it was critical to the overall Evangelion experience. Because like you said, it really does do justice to the inner struggle of Shinji and his mental state and everything. But at the same time, it also delivers on, like, I think part of the reason you were so upset and I was so disappointed at the end of 26 was that all these mysteries and everything were just not paid off.
Right.
You know, like all these things we wanted to learn about the Evas and the origin of like Adam and Lilith and all this stuff. Like it just felt like all that, none of that mattered, you know? And this, like, it addresses everything.
It does. I mean, it addresses it, like we said, in a way that's kind of open to interpretation. And it's still, I feel, secondary to the Shinji struggle. But there's something you said about the end of, even the end of Evangelion that I want to get to because I thought you made a really good point about it. But do you want to talk about what happens in the movie?
Yeah, we'll go through kind of the beats here. So first of all, it is split into like basically two different episodes here. So if we refer to 25 and 26 here, we're talking about within the context of the movie.
Yes.
We will specify the series if we're talking about those. If we're talking about the series, it's just Shinji in a chair freaking out. So right away, we just get a Sega logo, which I didn't expect to see the goddamn Sega logo there.
There are so many logos ahead of this
there
movie.
There are like 45 fucking logos before this movie starts.
It's like The Room.
Yeah, which I don't know.
Tommy's World. Yeah. 20 times.
There's like 26 different like Wizzo films or something. Yeah. I don't know how anime is produced. I don't know why there are so many logos, but
I will say that one logo with like the waves crashing on the shore, I really liked that.
There are some good logos. I love a good logo.
I love a good movie logo. I feel like there's a lot of really cool movie logos that I like. There's that one that's, I think it's the Blumhouse logo.
I was just thinking about that.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like we've, weirdly enough, between this show and just seeing movies through, like, the A-list AMC thing that we have never heard of, we've just accidentally seen a bunch of Blumhouse movies
there's
lately.
There's one with the arrow. You know what I'm talking about? Like, it's like an arrow. I forget the name of the studio.
The arrow? The Blumhouse one I'm thinking of is, like, it's like a spooky room and it's
That's
like a shadow.
That's the Blumhouse one, but this is a separate one. I'm thinking of a different movie studio. There's, obviously, Pixar is great.
Pixar's, yeah, The Lamp. That's great.
Oh,
Amblin, Spielberg's E.T. thing with the moon is good. DreamWorks, great logo. I don't know. I can't think of others. New Line, that's a solid one. I don't know if they're still around.
I really don't mind watching movie logos.
I love a good movie logo.
I like that better than like watching the previews ahead of a movie.
I also like a good video game logo, except for if it's unskippable. Well, okay. The thing I always go back to when I think of game logos is I owned NBA Jam and Mortal Kombat, all the Mortal Kombats on both like Genesis and Super Nintendo. Mm-hmm. And both of those had a million logos based on like who ported it to the console and everything. Mm-hmm. But they were fucking cool.
Yeah.
So the Probe logo, not great, but both of them had the like iguana with sunglasses that's spinning a basketball on its finger and it's like lounging on the iguana text. Just cool shit. Just objectively cool. The Sega logo on the Jurassic Park game for Genesis mm-hmm. is great because it's the classic Sega logo and the T-Rex comes up and goes, Sega! It's real good stuff.
Uh-huh.
Solid stuff. Vector Man shot the logo once, I think. Love a good logo thing. The Mario Paint logo, messing around with the letters.
All right, so we're off to a good start with End of Evangelion.
Yes, it's real good. So, and then let's go to Shinji just whacking off to a girl in a coma.
Oh, yeah, that was weird. So, Asuka's in the hospital after her, I think, suicide attempt, right? Like, she was she bloody in that tub in the middle of nowhere?
It's weird because, like, it's during the garbage of, like, you know, 25 and 26 where you don't really know what's going on, 25, 26 of the series, where, like, there were images of her being, like, really gaunt and not knowing what's going on.
Well, she was really gaunt. Like, the last time we saw her in the show in, like, episode 24, which I consider the episode before End of Evangelion.
Yeah, yeah.
She was in that tub. Remember, they, like, nerve forces got her from that tub in, like, the middle of, like, an abandoned house, and she looked super gaunt. So she had just, like, given up, and I think she's just recovering from that, like, both physically and mentally. She's just checked out because her whole self-worth was tied to being an Ava pilot, and her inability to synchronize meant that she couldn't be an Ava pilot anymore. So she was essentially suicidal. So she's comatose or sleeping or something, just knocked out in this hospital bed. And Shinji goes to hang out with her, I guess, wants her to yell at him again.
Yeah, saying like, just call me an idiot. Just do it. I need this.
And I don't know, there's some kind of, I don't know if he touches her or something, but her blanket goes back and she's just like naked with her hospital gown open. And instead of like immediately putting the blanket back up, he just like whacks off.
Yeah. He like flips her over and her boobs get exposed.
Yeah, her whole thing is exposed.
All of her business out there. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, and he just whacks off. There's the moment where they're cutting to a bunch of like equipment and stuff like that, and he's doing a bunch of like breathy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I remember thinking like, is he whacking off right now?
Yeah.
And then it just cuts to like, oh, that's his hand just covered in some business there.
Yeah.
And he definitely whacked off. He looks at his hand and he's like, I'm the lowest of the low, which in looking up stuff afterwards, I know that there's like some, I don't know, controversy is not the word, but there's some debate about like, I guess there is an original translation where he said like, I'm so fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess people, I don't know if it was the Netflix dub or something, but people were like, oh no, they changed I'm so fucked up to I'm the lowest of the low. I actually thought lowest of the low worked.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, he sees that and it's like, man, what the fuck am I doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So.
Yeah.
He's just doesn't know how to deal with anything, and he should quit doing most of the shit he's doing.
Yeah, or at least do it before he leaves the house or something.
Yeah, just don't. That's not the proper response to that situation, Shinji. Just get your shit together, man. Like, he's got some issues. I don't know. By the end of the show and movie, I don't know if he has quite. Well, maybe the show he has, the movie less so, I think.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get to that, which also involves Asuka.
It's a fractured timeline.
Yes. So we get some Xile stuff here, which they are not, like, all over this movie, but they are shown enough to, like, you know, they're clearly, the way Xile strikes me is that they are this, like, kind of devout, fanatical, like, we are following this, like, scripture, like, the Dead Sea Scrolls, like, you know, the prophecy has said that this has to happen, which I didn't quite understand if they were supposed to represent, like, in the early parts of the show, there were a lot of shots of, like, Gendo talking to, like, this war council of, like, different colored desks and stuff like that, but there were, like, actual people behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm assuming they are not the same as Xile, because Xile is always represented by these, like, monolith talking.
I think they are the same.
I wonder why there is the change then.
I don't know. I think maybe like when they're not on site, they're represented by these monoliths, because remember when Kaoru is talking to them on the lake, they're all the monoliths. But then briefly in the movie, one of the Xile guys is like a human again, not a monolith.
Oh, right. That's like a transition thing. It's just like some dude with sunglasses.
Yeah.
And a
so I think that's the same group. And their whole shtick, from what I understand, is that they want to fight evil with evil. They think humanity is fucked and they essentially want to put the reset button on it and start the Third Impact. They want human instrumentality.
They want Ava's to be the ark for humans, is what they say here, which is like, yeah, I think it's a Noah's Ark reference of like, okay, humans, Ava's are the way for humans to get to the next level of evolution, or...
It's all very, very confusing. So we should just move along.
It's very biblical, but they... Yeah, I don't even know how to begin talking about what they want here. But
they're the main thing is they're the ones that are against Nerev here and kind of causing the conflict between. And eventually, they come to the realization, everyone, that the final enemy of mankind is mankind himself.
Oh.
Of course, after all the angels, it's mankind that ends up fucking shit up. Which is crazy to think that, like, the soldiers, the Zele soldiers, when they invade Nerve HQ, they do way more damage than the angels did,
right? My God. Well, I mean, I think we're just seeing, like, straight-up murder at that point. Because, like, angels, we're seeing, like, they're fucking up buildings and stuff, and I think it's a lot of implied destruction. Yeah. Whereas, like, this invasion is fucked up. Like, mm-hmm. this is a straight-up bloody gun murder.
Yeah.
Which it seems like Zele has connections with the Japanese government, and we see a lot of like, what is it, like the JSS? I don't know what the acronym is, but it seems like, I don't know if it was specifically government task force people coming in or if it was just Zele's like military unit or something, but they are just coming in with guns.
Yes.
But we also like during this stuff, we also see that Masato is stowed away. She's kind of like tucked away. And she's learning the real truth behind the Second Impact.
From the thumb drive Kaji left her.
Yes, which, when I realized that's what was going on, there were several moments in this movie that I thought, like, oh shit, they're actually paying off the shit that we wanted. You know, like, because I remember during that last podcast we did, we were talking about, like, oh, I guess that's never getting paid off. And it got paid off. It super got paid off there. It at least got acknowledged.
Yes, it got acknowledged.
And that's, you know... That's a bare minimum I ask for from the stuff I watch. Is like, at least acknowledge the stuff you bring up as an important thing. And they at least acknowledged it here. But Zele, at first, before they go full-on military crazy, they want to attack the Magi.
Yeah, they're trying to hack it.
Yeah, we're going to take this thing over. We're going to take over the Evas and all this stuff. And Ritsuko, she stops the hack. She's in her weird mom chamber and talks to her mom AI or something, or does a hack thing and stops the thing.
She puts up some kind of fancy firewall and stops them for 60 hours.
We see some computer screens.
At least that's what we think that's all she's doing, but we'll find out what she was actually up to shortly.
Yes. But Zele, this is when Zele says, like, okay, occupy by force, and they send in, like, military craft and everything, and, like, things are fucking bad here. And so the bad guys, or Zele's troops or whatever, find Shinji, and at this point I was like, oh, I wonder if they're going to do just this crazy thing and just kill Shinji here. But Masato comes in with a save. Masato, just the best.
Badass lady.
She's the fucking best. Probably across the board. Best character in Evangelion?
Definitely my favorite. Oh, by the way, you should tell him what you had for dinner last night.
Oh, my God, yes. I made a note to make sure to say this. This is great. So we knew this was going to be the last like Evangelion thing we watch. And you actually texted me while I was at work, like, oh, should I prepare something for dinner? That'd be like a fun Evangelion thing. And I realized, like, well, there's not a whole lot of food stuff in the show except for... How about some ramen and beer?
Yes.
That is such a Masato thing. And I have not had top ramen since college. Uh-huh. And you made it the way I always used to make it, which is you drain the water and then you put all the seasoning on it. It's fucking amazing. And you made some great chicken on there. And I had a Bud Light. It was, oh my God, it was ideal. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You're a goddamn saint. Thank you so much. Oh man, now I'm just thinking about that. That was so much fun. I just want to keep eating ramen now. Anywho, Masato is trying to motivate Shinji, and Shinji is just, it's tough because, like, Shinji has always had his troubles throughout the show, and then we've had these moments of, like, him trying, he's like, oh, yeah, I'm actually going to, I'm going to get past this stuff or whatever. And again, like, you know, mental illness and depression, anxiety and stuff is not just a clear line of, like, I'm better, I'm worse or whatever. And so it makes sense that there's some up and down and everything with Shinji.
Right.
But it sucks that, like, there were some times that he seemed to be getting better and getting some confidence and standing up to his father. And then here he's just, like, dead weight in a parking garage. Like, I can't do it. I suck. Yeah. It's like, oh, fuck you. God damn it, Shinji.
Yeah, I mean... Like, my theory is, like, even if he wants to die or whatever, he's suicidal, like, then at this point, what does he have to lose in at least trying? You know what I mean?
Yeah, go out on your feet or, you know, fight for something, you know?
But it turns out that he wouldn't really have much of a choice anyway, because Unit 1 just activates on its own.
Yes, right. That does happen here in a bit. But we get a little bit of a little backstory about the second impact. And I can't remember if it's Gendo or someone talking about this, but like the second impact was man trying to revert Adam back to his egg state, which we'll get into some Adam stuff here. But the main thing I wrote down from this is that like we got flashes of that giant of light, which was like very briefly touched upon in an episode of the series where it's like, oh, there are images of this giant of light around the site of the second impact. And I remember thinking like, that's a really fun mystery. Like, what is that thing? And then when 25 and 26 in the series happened, I was like, God damn it, we didn't fucking touch on that at all. Mm-hmm. And so the second they like showed that image again, it's like, oh, thank God, they're talking about mm-hmm. this thing here. That's great. And then we learn that like Lilith is the source of humans, but is also the 18th angel, which I think we knew some of that before, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the Lilith stuff. I feel like was never, there wasn't like an episode where it was like, let's explain what Lilith is. I was confused about this for a while.
Well, from what I understand, humans come from Lilith and angels come from Adam.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
Lilith is the seed of knowledge and Adam is the seed of
wisdom.
I don't know.
Knowledge something. And wisdom kind of the same thing.
Some fancy word.
The Triforce had it figured out. You had courage, you got wisdom, you got power. There's three different things.
All right. Let's just call it power.
All right. Sure.
It's just you and me here.
Yeah. All right. And then we got Asuka. She's like cowering in Unit 2 and she's repeating over and over, like, I don't want to die. I don't want to die. Like, Asuka has just had a tough go of life and mm-hmm. it's just, I think she's afraid that it's about to end in this very unceremonious, terrible way. But then she like feels the spirit of her mother or something and then like gets a giant boost of confidence. Mm-hmm. And this shit is awesome. I was way into this.
Yes.
Unit 2 just fucking lifts a battleship up, tosses it at all these like soldiers, and then is grabbing these like weird helicopter aircraft things and swinging it into each other, mm-hmm. doing fucking Booker T axe kicks to some other ones. It's super sweet. And then Zele sends in a bunch of these like evil like B-2 stealth bombers. And I thought they were sending out these, like, robot glider things right. that were, like, falling off and, like, taken off. Turns out that is their own Avas.
Mass-produced Avas.
Yes, with no pilots.
S2 drives.
Yes, they've got S2 drives, which and no pilots.
Which is, like, the ZLA version of the dummy plug.
Right, yes, where it's like, okay, we don't actually have to put a 14-year-old in here. We can just pilot
which
this.
Seems like a better way to do
probably. Let's not put an actual teenage child in there.
Yeah, but her confrontation with these mass-produced Avas is so fucking cool.
Oh, man, this is a fucking highlight of the entire, like, Evangelion mm-hmm. experience, I think. Which, at this point, like, it's extremely clear that there's just so many biblical references and stuff going on with all the angelic stuff and everything in the show. But these, like, literally look like weird angels. Like, there are, like, wings sprouting from their backs and stuff like that. But then Asuka, like, grabs one and puts it over her and, like, splits it like a fucking God of War quick time event. And just blood is showering all over Asuka. Like,
so much blood.
This is Asuka's, like, crowning moment mm-hmm. is this whole fight scene. She mm-hmm. is fucking killing it. I mm-hmm. love it so much. But then we cut back to Masato, and Masato's like, hey, Shinji, quit doing everything you're doing. Quit crying. Quit beating yourself up. Just right. fucking stop being Shinji for a second here. And she's like, just, you want to get in the Ava one more time? There's some shit mm-hmm. going on here. This would probably help us out a lot. And then you can come back. And this is weird. She, Masato's got her crucifix thing, right? That
yes.
She had since her father gave it as a child during the second impact.
Right.
I got that right. And then she gives Shinji the crucifix and kisses Shinji.
Well, you forgot that she got shot at this point.
Oh, that's right. During all this kerfuffle with, like, Nerve getting invaded and stuff, there was, like, you don't know if she got, like, winged or something, but, mm-hmm. like, there was blood and she got shot. Which I wonder if this is the thing we see in 25 or 26 where there's blood on the wall or whatever, mm-hmm. but, like, she's shot.
Right.
And she gives him the crucifix and just kisses him right on the lips. Mm-hmm. She's, what? Late 20s, probably.
Mm-hmm.
He's 14.
She's like 27.
That's, don't do that.
I think the thing was, like, she was kissing him, and then she said, we'll do the rest when you get back.
Yes.
Like, giving him some motivation to... And she right. knew she was going to die.
Yes, and she says, like, that's how grown-ups kiss. Mm-hmm. We'll do the rest when you get back. Which, all right. Still weird.
It's weird, but it's not as weird when you think, like, she probably thought he was going to die and would never experience something like that.
She's trying to do, like, a bold thing to make things work out or something. But...
Well, yeah, and also, if he does die, you know, at least he kissed someone passionately, right?
Right. It's still, it didn't do a whole lot to, like, assuage the, like, when I see, like, her kissing him. It's like, ah, that's weird.
Yeah.
He's a literal child.
Well, they are cartoons, so he's not a literal child.
Oh, this didn't actually happen by any means. No.
And we already seen his cum, so at this point, him kissing someone is...
Whatever. It was extremely graphic. That is a close-up of his hand. Yes. Just lovingly animated. Yes. And so, yeah, Masato dies here. Mm-hmm. There's like an explosion. You know, she's like laying down, bleeding way more than I think we knew at that point.
Right.
But then there's just a big-ass explosion as Nerev is kind of dying, basically. That's the end of Masato, I think, both of our favorite characters of this show.
Mm-hmm.
So she is excellent. Bagendo goes down to the basement, or whatever the fuck you call that, with where Lilith is kept on the crucifix with Rei. And Ritsuko is trying to, like, take down the Magi and holding Gendo at gunpoint. And Gendo just shoots Ritsuko.
Well, she's going to... I guess when she was there fixing the or preventing Zele from hacking the Magi, she also made it like she planned a self-destruct sequence to self-destruct Nerve HQ. But if you remember many episodes ago, we learned that the three different supercomputers that comprise the Magi are Ritsuko's mother as a scientist, as a mother, and as a woman.
Yeah.
And I think Casper, the one of her as a woman, denied the self-destruct sequence because it's a supercomputer and it wanted to protect Gendo, who is her lover.
Right.
So she's like, oh, fuck, this didn't work. And then Gendo shoots her.
Yeah. So, like, back to back, Ritsuko and Masato just done for.
Yep.
Like, and if that's not enough, we cut back to Asuka, and Asuka's doing some cool shit at this point still. She's stabbing and slicing a bunch of those, like, mass-produced Evas. And then the Spear of Longinus, I'm probably saying that wrong, pierces through Asuka's AT field and just impales her right through the fucking head.
Yes.
Just brutal. And then all those dead mass-produced Evas, like, regenerate and come back to life. And just
still missing their limbs and severely damaged from the beating that they took. But,
yeah.
Which looks pretty cool.
Yeah, and they just tear her apart like vultures.
Oh, my
vultures.
God. Brutal. Like, all that's left is, like, a mess of teeth and blood and, like, rib cage.
Yeah, it's gruesome. Yeah. And then there's the extra cherry on top there where they all kind of fly away. Mm-hmm. And then they all throw, like, spears down and just, like, extra super fuck her up.
Yes.
It's an absolutely brutal death.
It's brutal. It's really cool, though.
It's a great scene. And you're kind of left to wonder, like, well, okay, we know that the pilots kind of feel this pain. It kind of reflects on them as a person. But, like, we don't know. Like, is Asuka dead here? It's not super duper clear.
I was convinced that she was dead at this point. But, yeah. So then we have Shinji still struggling, and he's in front of Unit 1, who's, like, encased in that red clay that was flooded through the HQ.
Yeah, at a certain point, Masato, like, calls for all the corridors to be flooded with this stuff. Mm-hmm. That makes it so, like, you know, people couldn't... Basically a last-ditch defensive thing or whatever. And so Unit 1 activates and blows the roof off the Nerve Pyramid there. Mm-hmm. And then, this part's awesome, where Unit 1 just comes up. It's a very, like, godlike thing of it coming out. And all these soldiers are like, oh, it's the devil incarnate. Mm-hmm. And then
it has this giant, like, fire wings.
Yeah, it's just some real cool visuals there. Cool. I was way into this. And Shinji sees Asuka's, like, the body of Unit 2, and Shinji screams. And then I don't think we expected it to go to credits at this point, because we're, like, halfway through this movie. But it cuts to this weird kind of, like, DNA Helix credits with some Donna Burke-ass Snake Eater song playing. And that goes on for a while.
Yes.
And so it even says, like, episode 25 and 26 here, which kind of just muddies the waters and confuses what this is. But, okay, we're into a different episode 26
now. You know
what?
It's not the original episode 25 and 26, so I am A-okay with whatever it wants to do.
Honestly, I can see why if somebody just watched episodes 1 through 24 and then this movie, that's a way you could watch this for sure.
Totally. I think that's the better way to watch it.
I'm glad we saw 25 and 26 and then saw this, which is the more satisfying ending, so we could just have the full context and everything. But, like, I feel like you wouldn't even have to deal with the confusion and disappointment of the series, episode 25 and 26, if you just did it this way.
Yes.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah. So is it the beginning of the second half where we're with Gendo and Rei and in the Terminal Dogma thing?
Yeah, and so Gendo and Rei are there and Rei is just like falling apart. Like her arm is just falling off in front of him.
She's naked and just disintegrating kind of, and he says it's time. I guess that means it's time for the third impact. And keeping in mind that he has Adam fused in his hand, he squeeze on her titty, and then his hand just goes into her whole body.
He does a Kano fatality, a Temple of Doom thing there.
And then Rei's like, hold up, Shinji needs my help. So she says, fuck Adam, you know, fuck Gendo, essentially, get out of here.
Yeah.
And she decides to, instead of merging with Adam, and keep in mind, Rei is the vehicle for Lilith's soul.
Yes. So when... that is what Gendo was trying to do, was to merge with Lilith, because the soul was inside of Rei at this point. So that's what the whole hand boob grab was.
Well, it was more Adam merging with Lilith, because if Adam merges with Lilith, that would be the third impact.
Right. So he was trying to put that thing that was in his hand into Lilith's soul or whatever.
But instead, Rei's like, oh no, I'm going to go have Shinji take control of this instead of you, Gendo. Because if Gendo did that, then Gendo would be in control of this like third impact thing. But she was like, oh no, Shinji needs my help. So she goes and decides to merge with Lilith, who's there hanging out on the crucifix. And then a giant fucking Rei happens.
Yes. So before we go into full-blown Crazy Bones territory here, Shinji is still like up there doing his thing with Unit 1, and he activates his ultimate, and that's like a giant crucifix basically happens. Again, we're just going all out with the religious symbolism here. And Zile starts saying this whole prayer about the Evas are going to return to their true form, and I just have no idea where shit's going at this point. Mm-mm. And Unit 1 like ascends into the sky with a bunch of the mass-produced Evas biting the crucifix.
Right.
And there's a giant explosion, and then a lot of talk of, like, the egg of Lilith, the black moon, which that is, we've looked up YouTube videos and we've learned a bit about that, but I don't feel like they spent a lot of time talking about that here. But after that, yeah, so that's when Rei is like, hey, I'm not going to do this. You know, Gendo's trying to reunite with Yui and everything. So when Rei floats up to Lilith here, Lilith's, like, chest sucks her in. And Lilith comes off of the crucifix. And then it's this weird thing where Lilith kind of drips down and like her mask kind of melts off her face and everything. Mm-hmm. It's all visually, I think, extremely
cool. Yeah.
Like, honestly, from this point on, I think visually the show is just doing bonker shit that I really appreciated and really thought was cool. Because that's, okay, so now we're in giant naked Rei territory.
Yeah, and Dan, you know me. You know how much I appreciate scale.
Oh,
especially when it comes to large objects. For instance, like Dan and I will watch Planet Earth and stuff. Planet Earth is fucking amazing, but a lot of times, like, there'll be these big zoomed out landscapes which look majestic, but it's like, okay, this looks amazing, but I have no idea how big this is because I don't have any point of reference. Like, it could be massive or it could be, you know, the size of the hill down the block or something. But then you'll see like a little polar bear walking and be like, oh, I know how big that is. So that puts it all in perspective. So this giant fucking Rei was making the Evas look like the size of ants. Like, Rei was essentially as big as Earth itself. And can you imagine being a human on Earth and seeing, like, a human entity that fucking huge? That would be so terrifying.
Or it's like if it bent down from the sky and looked at the Earth, that, like, if its eyeball would basically take up most of the sky that you could see.
Yeah,
like,
that would be so fucking creepy, but also amazing.
I have dreams that, like, I don't want to call them nightmares, even though they're very unsettling, but, like, where I walk out of my apartment or my house or something, and I look up, and, like, all the planets of the solar system are disturbingly close, where it's like, oh, there's Saturn, there's Jupiter, but, like, they're giant in the sky. Yeah. You know, they're taking up, like, most of the sky. Like, there's something about that that is so, like, otherworldly and scary. And
it is really kind of disarming and stuff, unnerving. I remember in like my many adventures in the past with modding, I forgot what game it was, but I fucked something up, and instead of the skybox, it was one of like the UV maps for like someone's face. So it was just someone's face encompassing the entire sky, oh, like the flat,
like a JPEG just spread out.
Well, you know, like the flat like maps, the texture maps.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
yeah. It was like really creepy.
Jeez. I thought it was very funny that we watched a bunch of videos on YouTube after we finished this movie, and one of them was about, I can't remember if it was like a Nintendo 64 or a PS2 fighter or something that's based on Evangelion. Mm-hmm. And if you play as, I forget which character can activate this as a special move, but you can basically use the third impact as a special move.
Lilith,
it's Lilith? Okay, and you just like do half a health bar for the third impact, which is like the most galactically important thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing about fighting games. Like in Mortal Kombat 11, like in those, not the fatalities, but the
The lethal brutality, blows or whatever.
Yeah, the lethal blows. Yeah. Yeah, like you'll be impaling someone's neck on like a spike, and then they'll be like, oh, just a quarter of their health is gone.
Yeah. Suspend disbelief, I guess. But so giant naked Ray stands up through the clouds and faces Shinji and the Evas. And the Evas start, like, fusing into her, mm-hmm. and my notes here say, everything is beyond fucked.
Yeah, I don't remember. She, at this point, does she have the vagina in her head and hands?
Oh, we're getting there. I think first, I was confused by Kaworu is in there, too, I guess, mm-hmm. because they kind of, like, split in a weird way, and Kaworu there is there and, like, reaches out to Shinji.
Well, he's the soul of Adam, and she's the soul of Lilith.
So I guess it would make sense. Did she, like, absorb that part of Gendo's hand, like the Adam stuff?
I think she did, yeah.
Okay, so there's a bit of Adam and Kaworu in there or something. Oh, Kaworu, I feel like I need to watch a whole YouTube video just about Kaworu, because he was just a thing that popped up and disappeared. And
yeah, apparently he's a big deal, but if I didn't know he was a big deal, I wouldn't have... You know,
he was a big deal in one episode, mm-hmm. and then like I feel like they had to like refer to it in this, mm-hmm. you know. But like, man, and I know in the Rebirth movies and everything, I know they like introduce him earlier or something. But man, I feel like I've got a decent grasp. I feel like I've got a 70% grasp of most of the things in the show and movie, except for Kaworu. Mm-hmm. I don't quite know what his whole deal is. But Unit One's heart is like pierced, and it. I don't know if it's God now, or they say something about, like, the Tree of Life, but it's, like, it turns into this, like, giant red crucifix thing, and I think officially the third impact is fully underway mm-hmm. at this point, and it's all just awesome nonsense mm-hmm. at this point. Yes. I fucking love all this shit. So Shinji is in, like, bliss now. We see some shots of him, like, close up, like, just orgasm face or whatever. And where he's having flashbacks to, like, a playground soundstage with his mom with some dolls. And he's building a pyramid that looks like Nerve, and he kicks it. I'm sure this is all very symbolic and everything. He sees Masato have sex with Kaji. He's having a lot of, like, horny memories mm-hmm. and thoughts and everything. Which, again, 14-year-old boy, that's how things work, I guess. But it's weird when his brain is dying or whatever the fuck is going on at this point. It's just a bunch of horny stuff he wants to whack off to.
Well, this is the process of the melding with other people, right?
Oh boy, is this where we're going into human?
Let's just continue with what happened.
We don't know.
Yeah.
So, and then there's this weird thing where he's having this like domestic fight in a kitchen. It's like Shinji and Asuka in a kitchen, and he chokes her, and then things just start going extra crazy, if they hadn't already, where it's like, it looked like CG red outlines of people, like paper dolls kind of floating mm-hmm. around. It was very odd. But then, okay, so Unit 1 and Ray seem to be flying into space in the real world here. And this is like full on, like 2001 Space Odyssey, like Star Child shit at this point. It's beyond that at this point. This is way more surreal than 2001. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm just going to read some notes I wrote down out loud.
Yes.
And we'll talk about it later. Ray grabs egg in space. Bunch of Rays creeping around Nerve. Okay, wait, I can actually talk about this. A bunch of Rays creeping around Nerve and killing everyone. And so it's all the people in Nerve are like seeing what they want to see. Mm-hmm. Like the people that they like talking to or whatever. But it's just like a weird version of Ray ghosts like appearing as that and then just turning them into goo.
Yeah. Well, the LCL stuff. This is the beginning of the instrumentality thing because everyone turns into LCL and just fuses with each other.
Yeah. And everyone just thinks it's like, oh, I have a crush on Masato. Here's Masato. Oh, nope. That's just a ghost and I'm goo now. It's all very, very weird. At some point here, Unit 1 bites Gendo's head off. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's actually like... So I think I was confused when this happened because I didn't know if this was all in the middle of a bunch of just like nonsense mm-hmm. that I don't know if we were supposed to take literally or whatever. But I believe this was Gendo's death, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think he was having, just like everyone else was having visions before they turned to the LCL, he was having this vision of Yui and Rei and people confronting him about what a terrible father he was.
Yeah.
And he was talking about, he was kind of talking about his logic and stuff, and it made it seem like if Shinji was an adult, this is how Shinji would be. Like, Shinji would be the same as Gendo. Like, their way of thinking is so similar, as far as, like, you don't want to deal with something, so you don't deal with it.
And very self-centered and just, like, kind of single-minded and
everything. Yeah. But I guess, you know, Unit 1 is fused with Yui's soul. And I guess as retribution for Gendo being a terrible father or whatever, Unit 1 bites his head off.
Yeah, so that's the end of Gendo right mm-hmm. there. Which, Unit 1 is not like Shinji is not inside there at this point, right?
No, Shinji's
in Unit 1. He's in space at this point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, apparently he grabs Gendo at some point and bites his head off. And then Eva's with Rei faces on them, stab themselves in the heart with spears. And then Earth is covered with lasers and everyone screams and dies, is my note. Mm-hmm. But now after we've watched some stuff, I think we have a better understanding of what's going on here, which is, okay, so the AT fields that humans produce, right? Those are the walls, the emotional walls we put up
right.
to keep us, it's all yes. very metaphorical and weird. But it melts all the AT fields. Everyone kind of melts and their bodies die and everyone...
Well, they all turn into the LCL.
Yeah, so it's this goo. It's this yeah. primordial ooze that is basically sweeping over the world again and just reducing humanity into this like singular entity.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very weird stuff here. Space Rei cradles a blood orb and then a vagina opens up in her head. In her hands. And there's a crucifix that stabs an eye in the vagina in her head.
I thought it was the Spear of Longinus that... fucked her head vagina.
I'm sorry, it's a head vagina eye.
Also, I'm wondering if it was Gendo that did the fusing, would it be like a bunch of dicks on his body?
Oh boy, is that one of the like 36 timelines or something? It's just the Gendo wins and there's a bunch of dicks floating around space.
It's a dick growing out of his head, much like me. My brother's convinced me that I was born with a penis on my forehead because one day when I was in kindergarten, my mom was combing my hair and I leaned forward and I burned my forehead on a light bulb. And there was a scar there. And my brother said that was the scar from when I had the penis surgically removed from my forehead. So I think Gendo would have that and the two hand dicks. He would have a dick in each hand.
Yeah, I think there would just be dicks everywhere if Gendo just... the Gendo version of this that mm-hmm. was on the cutting room floor. Just mm-hmm. be a whole bunch of dicks going on here. But no, Rei wins, But so it's a bunch of vaginas and crucifixes.
You know what's wild? We see a lot of titties in the show. We uh-huh. see a lot of vagine.
Mm-hmm.
There's explicitly vagine in the movie, but there's outline of it and such. But we never see any dick.
There's not even like an outline of a dick, I don't think.
Mm. Not even an outline.
Isn't that like Japanese porn, though? Like, they got to blur the wiener, but you show the vagina?
All the Japanese porn I've seen still has the vagina blurred.
The vagina is blurred?
Yeah, the whole shebang is blurred.
I don't know if that's a law or if that's a custom or how that works.
Yeah, I don't know.
And there's a thesis paper we could read about this. But at a certain point here, there's definitely some like sperm and egg opening of Look Who's Talking To stuff going on, where it's a bunch of just like swimming Rei tadpole sperms going around in like red floating mm-hmm. whatever. Man, this show gets fucking... This movie's wild. It's
yeah,
great.
Yeah, it's very different from, say... Something's Gotta Give.
In some ways, it's different.
I would say on the spectrum, there's End of Evangelion. On the other side of the spectrum, there's like You've Got Mail.
That's fair. You know what? I think that's fair. As a film studies major, I can back you up on mm-hmm. that. But Shinji is starting to see some flashes of like, I saw this as like what he wants to hear from women, where it's like these women saying like, hey, if it hurts, you can give up. You can run away. It's fine. Just, you know, the like three women he's horny about right. saying like, yeah, give up. That's cool. Like, yeah, we'd be turned on if you did that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just cut to live action cats and trains. And so it's just actual footage of cats, trains, streets, people, and then a theater.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, man, I loved this part. They didn't dive too deep, but I think the moments they spent on this were pretty clear. Okay, I don't remember specifically what or who was talking. Was it Ray talking at this point?
I don't remember.
There's the narration happening. I took it as like, I feel like they actually showed footage of people watching the show's episodes 25 and 26.
It seems
and
like
it
was from like a theatrical presentation of the final two episodes of the series.
Yeah.
And everyone, I thought it was that immediately because I noticed the audience was largely male. I didn't notice any girls there. And one of them was holding like a Ray doll.
Yeah, they looked like fanboys.
Yeah. And I was like, that's what came to mind was like they looked as disappointed as I looked at the end of those two episodes.
Yeah.
So.
And then they're flashing like emails and shit on the screen in Japanese, which we can't read, obviously. But oh my God, the narration starts saying stuff like, oh, you just retreat into this fictional world because you can't handle the real world. Mm-hmm. And like, that's why you just suck.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like this was so clearly an attack on just like obsessive fandom.
Yes.
And I like all the stuff I said last time, you know, even though I was disappointed by episodes 25 and 26 of the show, I really did kind of love Anno's apparent disdain for the fans. And this one was just like, oh God, you're just showing footage of them and being like, hey, fuck you nerds.
Right.
Like, I just love, I don't know. I that doesn't seem like the whole point of this movie, but just that they even took like a little few minute stretch just to be like, hey, fuck you dorks.
I feel like this movie would have been totally fine without that. So the fact that it was there was like definitely just a little fuck you to the fans.
Yeah. Right? It's boy, that's a bold move that I, that's, yeah, that's good. That's good stuff. But Space Ray's neck gets slit. And Shinji says at a certain point here that he wants to meet other people and that he thinks that that feeling is genuine. And then Unit 1 bursts out of Space Ray's eyeball. Space, okay, again, my notes verbatim. Space grid globe pierces Ray's stomach and blows up. And then Space Ray starts falling apart. Her limbs are falling off. Her skin is melting. And then Unit 1 is standing tall over, like, this space field of, like, a million neon crucifixes. Man, I, again, I'm not going to pretend that during all these moments that we were watching that I was like, oh, I understand what this means. Like, no, it was a whole bunch of crazy symbolic nonsense, it seemed at times. But, man, was I fully on board for all this. It was so much cooler, even it just boiled down to visually, than the way that they ended the show. And then Shinji says goodbye to his ghost mother. He floats to the surface of this red water and sees, I love this, Space Ray's like face getting split in half, like this giant head like on the horizon of this like red ocean getting split in half. Just a crazy fucking visual. And then the end, where Shinji and Asuka wake up on the shores of this lake of like LCL, I assume. And he starts choking her. So, okay. So I've seen people say that the ending of this movie is the other way that things could have gone versus the show. Because at the end of the show, it is a positive note where he's like, oh, I need to accept other people into my life. I need to, you know, feel
is
the rest
positive,
of people.
Is it positive, though? Because it seems like that's instrumentality happening. So his individuality is lost, but he's still okay with merging other people. So I think it's making the best of a bad situation in the show. And I think the movie is making still being shitty in a better situation. He reclaims his identity, but he still is reluctant to connect with other people.
Yeah, like, is it a false happiness in the show where it's like, you know, you can make the allusions to like the Matrix where, okay, when you're living in the Matrix, everything seems way better, or is it better to live a true reality in this shitty world and just make the best of that? You know, I think it's not a very clear-cut ending here. But so the ending of this movie is him rejecting the human instrumentality project in the third impact and not wanting to form with everyone else in the LCL pool or whatever and choking her, which like it seems at this point, for all he knows, this is the only other human on the planet that isn't part of this pool, and he starts choking her. So I guess the lesson here is that like, oh, even though there's one other person on the planet, he still can't figure out how to fucking coexist with other people.
But he stops choking her when she touches his cheek. But also the question is, I thought he had the power to reject instrumentality because he was the one kind of in control of it. But how did Asuka? I mean, there's still a lot of questions, which the amount of questions that there are there, and like I said, all this stuff is kind of open to interpretation, makes me believe strongly that it's just about his mental state, like his state of mind, really. It's not all about the other stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, he cries on her face, basically, and she says, disgusting, and it ends.
Sin.
Yeah, yes, exactly. So yeah, I do like that a lot of it is open to interpretation, especially since things go so fucking bonkers at the end that, like, right. I don't think there's a way to put a bow on this.
No.
You know, I don't think there is a way to, like, there's everyone agrees.
Yeah, like, you and I, after we watched it, we watched some YouTube videos, and, you know, we were hoping it would be something like, okay, this, we knew what happened. Dan and I watched the movie, we knew what happened, but we didn't understand what happened. And we were hoping there would be a thing that would explain to us why this stuff was happening. And it seemed like no one could say anything with confidence. It was all just kind of inferring from stuff. And after a lot of watching, putting the pieces together and this and that, I don't think there's a conclusion that, like, a mainstream audience like Dan and I or, like, a casual viewer could draw based solely on what was presented to us in the movie and the show. So I think that what we can do is just, like, you know, rest on or find a conclusion in the fact that, like, Shinji, at the end of it all, decided that he would rather feel pain and continue with his painful existence because of and in doing so, he would hold on to the hope and the possibility of connecting with someone, essentially saying that the occasional moments of happiness are worth enduring all the pain. I think that was the ultimate conclusion of the movie, which I definitely think is true. I mean, there's so much, you know, there's a lot of beauty in the everyday small moments of happiness that we get, even if we're in a bad way or really sad, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It reminds me of, like, from The Watchmen, where not Ozymandias, Dr. Manhattan is talking to that lady, I forgot her name.
It's not Black Widow, right? What's the, she's got yellow and black, I know, it's been a while.
Yeah, it has been a while, but he's essentially saying, like, you know, for all the power I have, like, nothing compares to, like, you know, the fact that the miracle of life itself, like, the fact that you exist at all is a miracle and stuff. So, you know, the human experience is a varied one that has ups and downs, and I think everyone has their share of hardships and struggles, like Shinji, self-doubt. And, you know, a lot of the time we're our worst enemy. I think most of the time we are. And that is what goes with being complex and, you know, having different reactions to things and being surrounded with stimuli all the time. And, you know, the emptiness that comes with just everyday life, even if you're around people, you can still feel, you know, so much loneliness. But at the same time, there's moments that make it all worthwhile. Like, if you have a shitty day and you have one positive interaction, that could change it all around. You know what I mean? I think the happy moments are much more powerful than the low ones. I think that's kind of what it was getting at the end of the show.
Yeah, and that an existence that has really high highs and really low lows and, you know, a lot of variance there is ultimately richer than one where it's just kind of a constant hum.
Yeah.
Of just like, I'm just existing.
You don't want to be numb to everything and not be able to experience. You know, and I think there's an argument to be made that, like, painful stuff is just as valuable, too, as positive stuff.
Yeah, totally.
Though it's not as enjoyable.
Encourages growth and everything as a person. I think this really stuck the landing. As much as, you know, 25 and 26 of the show, I totally understand why people, you know, back when it aired, were upset, and you were upset, I remember. And I was disappointed, too. You know, it didn't pay off. But ultimately, I think as long as someone watches End of Evangelion after all this, I think it makes everything worth it. It makes me not want, you know, I don't want to, like, strike 25 and 26 from the record because I think that is part of the story here. And I think that's an interesting alternate ending of this thing. And it really does recontextualize everything. But this movie was critical in my overall feelings about Evangelion as a work, you know. I'm so glad we watched it. And I totally understand now where it's like, you know, a lot of anime fans, when they send in their recommendations or it's like, you have to do it this way, you have to do that. But, like, I do understand it in this way where it's like, if you just watch the entire series on Netflix because you heard this classic anime was on Netflix now and you ended at episode 26, I totally would tell someone like, no, please watch. Like, I would totally turn into that anime comment guy where it's like, trust me, just watch this thing. You have to. Mm-hmm. It's critical, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they definitely ended it as best they could. It was still in the spirit of the ambiguity of the of, you know, 24 and the previous episodes leading up to that. It didn't really put a perfect bow on everything. It didn't answer all these questions that we wanted answered concretely. But it was a conclusion, and it's a kind of an abstract show. So it goes that the conclusion would be abstract. You can't. If there's one thing I learned that I would tell someone if they were going to start watching this for the first time, I would say, don't go in expecting that there's going to be resolutions for everything. Just go along for the ride. It's kind of like a Haruki Murakami novel in that, like, if you go in expecting every single thing to be explained, you're going to be dissatisfied. You just have to go along for the ride that it's putting you on.
I felt that recently because you introduced me to his short story collections. Mm-hmm. And, like, Blind Willow, Sleeping Woman? Mm-hmm. There were so many of those stories where it's like, okay, this is what it's about. Yeah. But then it would just go down a different path and then just end. And be like, wait, what? We didn't even, like... And you just kind of learn to accept that, like, okay, this is going to have a different flow. Right. And don't expect this to follow the typical narrative arcs. Yeah,
if you're waiting for some kind of explanation as to why things are happening, it's not the place you want to go. It's very surreal.
Yeah, and I'm fine with things being kind of up in the air and surreal and stuff, but like I feel like if it was just 25 and 26 of the show, that's too much. I feel like we introduced too many things throughout the earlier parts of the show that deserved some sort of payoff, and I really love that end of Evangelion called back to pretty much everything. Like I don't see a lot of like loose ends that I... This is the Metal Gear Solid 4 of anime.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, Dan, I think... After we've watched this show, I think for a lot of people, this is an important show in the pantheon of anime. I think we might be able to call each other anime fans.
Oh, I think that's fair. I think it was pretty clear after how much we love My Hero. And you watch a lot of Dragon Ball, and you enjoyed a good amount of that before you were like, okay, I get it. I think after this one... Yeah, I think we're fans of anime. I saw someone say that my anime education has basically been like going from like anime 101, which is Dragon Ball, to like they described Evangelion as like just straight up total mindfuck. And it's like, I get that. Yeah. And I feel like, I don't know, My Hero is not like a mindfuck by any means, but it's like it's somewhere in between in terms of like maturity, you know?
Well, My Hero makes you feel things other than confusion. I never feel confused watching My Hero, but I do feel it's not like it's a dumbed down show. Like I feel like Dragon Ball is a dumbed down show for kids, but
it's so fun.
It's fun. I mean, yeah,
I like Dragon Ball.
But My Hero makes you feel things like inspired and sad, and you can relate to these characters, and you're rooting for them, and this and that. Evangelion is more a conceptual thing, like a look into someone's struggle with their mental health.
I had to compare them to movies. Evangelion is 2001 A Space Odyssey. My Hero Academia is Rocky. And Dragon Ball is like Space Jam.
I think My Hero is more like Forrest Gump.
Huh. All right. I feel like My Hero gives me so many of those notes of like training, getting better, and like inspiring, like, you know, like you become the best version of you that, like, you know, there's a lot of good music and stuff too.
Yeah.
Oh, now I just want a cut of My Hero with Rocky music.
I'm sure it
exists. No easy way out with, yeah, probably does. Anime is pretty great.
It's really cool. I definitely want to watch more anime movies with you. Like we love the Miyazaki stuff, the Studio Ghibli stuff that we watched.
Yeah.
Ghibli? How am I supposed to
say? Ghibli? I'm not sure. We watched Mononoke, and we watched Spirited Away. Mm-hmm. I bought what's the maybe Kiki's Delivery Service? I think I bought that on
the Totoro one,
Amazon deal or something.
There's
I might have Totoro, yeah. Grave of the Fireflies.
Yeah, I read that was like when they were showing it in Japan, they would show that one first, and then My Neighbor Totoro.
Really.
To like raise people's spirits, I'm sure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was like a double feature.
I love there's a lot of just imagination to those that I would definitely go back to that. But yeah, it's very clear to me that, you know, when I thought about anime growing up, it was very much like, oh, it's a bunch of guys with spiky hair screaming and throwing fireballs. Which, actually, when I put it that way, I don't know how I didn't get into it back then. But it's just so clear to me now after seeing more of it, like how much more of a wide variety that anime. Like,
I think that when you were growing up and into your, like, young adulthood and stuff, and actually when I met you, too, You would judge things not in their own right, but you would judge them by their fandom.
Yep.
And I think that in recent years, since we've been together, you've just, it's been like so, a year, like many years of firsts for you. I feel like you've opened up so much and become so much more open-minded and, you know, just willing to try anything. I mean, really, it's amazing. It's been like such an adventure to see your reaction to things that you had, previous ideas about that were obviously proven false, especially in regards to anime, but in other things, obviously food, music and stuff like that. And it's been really cool to see.
It's been a really incredible several years. And I do credit you with a lot of that. I would just kind of just making me more open-minded or growing up, and again, love my dad. Dad's a great guy, but it was very much, I was always told people who like this type of music are like this, or people who drink wine are like this, or people who dance are like this, and with no nuance at all. And I feel like as I got older, and especially after I met you, I just got way more open-minded to just being like, no, people just kind of like what they like. And, there's a lot more complexity to it. And everything.
What someone likes, like judging someone based on what they like is stupid because what someone likes doesn't define them as a person.
No.
But also judging that thing by your notions of what a group of people is like is just as stupid. You're just doing yourself a disservice. So
it's unfair to the artist or the piece of art and the fan base. Mm-hmm. I don't like to do that anymore. It's been very, very fulfilling to kind of change my tune on that stuff.
And you've been great
since I met you. Mm-hmm. Well, I credit you with damn near all of it.
Well, so. I mean, even on your other podcasts, when you talk about video games, like you talk about it in such a more analytical way than just being dismissive about things and stuff. And
I try to be.
As someone that listens to those podcasts, as someone who plays a lot of video games, I listen to those podcasts for information about what's going on in games. And as a listener, it's much more enjoyable as well.
I'm good.
Yeah.
I want to grow as a person
and
be better. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. We're getting all personal and sweet here. Look at this. At the end of our weird crucifix vagina space show podcast.
Well, look, we're all just, doing our own thing, trying to experience life in our own way, much like Shinji. And I think it's good to take a step back as frequently as possible and appreciate everything around you. And I think that's something you and I do a lot.
Oh, yeah. We talk about it a lot.
Yeah, we all the time. We're like, we got it made in the shade here.
It's good stuff.
It is very good stuff.
Yeah. I was really glad to go on this journey of Evangelion with you and through all the ups and downs, through all the this is some fun, cool robot fights to there's some deeper stuff going on. Mm-hmm. Oh, is that robot his mom? To, oh, we hate this. Yes. To, oh, wait a minute. Actually, this might be kind of amazing.
It was a ride for sure.
It is. And ultimately, I think it really pays off in a very satisfying way. And
pays off in a satisfying way.
Satisfying is a weird word because it's
open
like
to interpretation.
So cosmically weird and everything that satisfying is maybe reductive, but
they made their own scientists, their own science for the show, and we are not scientists. Yeah.
At the end of the day, I will say I love Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Yes. I'm glad we experienced it together.
Yes, it is one of my favorite viewing experiences. Definitely with this podcast, I'm trying to think. It's up there with in a different way. It's hard to compare it to My Hero or something. But it is definitely in the Hall of Fame of, out of 70 episodes of this podcast we've done. It's definitely one of my favorites.
One of the most memorable.
I will never forget the show.
Speaking of our favorite things, there's some listeners out there that are great.
Yes.
And we should pay, we talk about being grateful for the things that we have and for being alive. And, I think it's time to pay homage to a select listener.
I think we should.
Do you want to describe our listener support program real
Absolutely.
Quick?
If you've listened to Painting the Stream before, you know that we participate in Anchor's listener support program. Anchor is the service we go through to put our podcast out to all you fine folks. And listener support is something where if you go to paintingthestream.com and you click support this podcast, you can choose to help us out and keep the lights on here at this podcast at $1, $5 or $10 a month.
Keep the treats flowing for Razor.
Yeah, a lot of that does definitely go to Razor's little tummy there, laying on the floor.
Oh, his tiny tummy.
He does not seem interested in this Evangelion talk. But yeah, that goes straight to us. And you can actually do 1, 5, or 10 and then just cancel. And there's absolutely no penalty whatsoever. But if you do that, it is greatly, greatly appreciated. Really, we put a lot of work into this podcast, and it's very fun to sit here with you, Bunk, and talk about these shows that we watch. And to know that people are listening and supporting means
it's really
the world
cool.
to us. So we want to show how much it means to us by giving each person that supports us a custom Bonku, which, if you've not heard before, is a haiku written by Bonk, which is what we call Bianca. So sorry, it's a bit of a workaround there, but Bonku
I'm Bonk.
Means a haiku written by Bonk, which is her.
If you see me on the streets, you could just call me Bonk.
Bonk's,
that's what I go by.
It's good stuff.
Bonk.
Yeah.
So this week's Bonku is for our friend Denzel, who was kind enough to take time out of his day to click the support button. And Denzel, this one's for you. His name is Denzel, but I prefer to call him my very good friend.
You know what? That gets everything across so well. That is a solid Bonku. I hope Denzel loves
Denzel's
that.
Denzel's a solid guy. I feel like Denzel is one of those guys that's like just taking care of business, doesn't need any superfluous, frivolous nonsense. He knows what he wants. He's straight to the point. He's a meat and potatoes kind of guy. And I just wanted to give him a meat and potatoes kind of Bonku.
And if he thinks you're having a bad day, he'll be like, hey, man, let's go out. Let's go get some beers. Let's talk about stuff.
He's there for you.
Yes. And he's supporting this podcast. So thank you so much
solid
for that, Denzel.
Denzel.
Solid dude. So go to paintingthestream.com if you would like to also support this podcast and get a custom Bonku for you.
And if you haven't gotten your Bonku yet, don't fret. It's coming.
Yes.
I have a list, and I know every one of your names, and it's coming for you shortly.
Bonk is highly organized. I have seen the spreadsheet. You will be getting your Bonku. We are going to keep making this show. Oh, boy. We have to move into uncharted territory. We've done 5 weeks now of Evangelion. We're moving into new stuff next. But for now, if you have suggestions, if you have any recommendations or anything or feedback, you can email us at paintingthestream@gmail.com. We're actually pretty open right now. Like, Evangelion was kind of the big looming project we had. You know, we've got My Hero on the horizon.
It'd
we will definitely
to tackle
do...
some little bite-sized one-week, one-episode things.
Yeah, we're going to knock out some stuff before we do another whole, like, chunk of, like, anime. It's not just an anime podcast, even though it may look like it throughout the recent history of this. But yeah, we'll check out some other stuff before we get to My Hero. So send in your recommendations to paintingthestream@gmail.com or follow us or let us know any recommendations at PanTheStream on Twitter. If you follow us on Twitter, you will see what we are going to be watching for the next Sunday's episode.
And you can watch it along if you want.
You can.
But you don't have to. Because we rehash it, but, you know, we suggest it.
Certain shows, I think, demand it a bit more than others. I would think, let's look at Evangelion. Probably nonsense if you have not watched the show. But if you didn't watch Love on a Leash or Kindergarten Cop 2, you could probably listen to those podcasts and you're gonna know what's going on.
And if you're my mom, you don't have to watch anything. You just like listening to us talk.
Yeah. Well, your mom was already a huge Evangelion mark.
True,
so,
she is.
Yeah.
She has the whole, like, Dead Sea Scrolls tattooed on her back.
She's got that Nerf hoodie that she always wears that we didn't know what it was until we watched this. Yeah. Let's get your mom a Nerf hoodie. All right, Bonk. That is the end of our Evangelion journey. I'm so glad we went on this together.
Same.
It was a fun ride.
It was a fun ride.
I hope you at home enjoyed listening to it. And that's it. That's it for this run. But we will be back next week. There's always more on these streaming platforms here. So join us next week on Painting the Stream. We want to thank Tom Manda for the theme song you're hearing right now. Check out Terraformer by Thank You Scientists, their new album. And, tune in with us next week. We'll have more to talk about. Bonk, thanks so much.
Thank you, Dan. Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye, folks.